This will be the one time I can say, I'm going to keep you till 9 o'clock. And it won't really matter because that's only 45 minutes from now, 44 minutes. So it won't really be 9 o'clock, but we'll just go with that anyways. Mark chapter 14, let's go with that. Mark chapter 14. We are in our third lesson in Mark chapter 14. Last week we looked at only two verses and it took us a good amount of time. And we all got to learn about pilcrows. Alright, not pilgrims, but pilcrows. Alright, a lot of conversation about that afterward. It's always good when what we learn and what we see stirs up conversation. So that is a blessing. Tonight we're going to look at a little more than two verses. We're going to begin in verse number 12 of Mark chapter 14. Verse number 12 and read down through verse number 16. I was going to go all the way down to verse number 26 because it's all about the same thing, but I decided after getting ready that I wasn't going to try to keep you till 9 o'clock really. So I decided just to go to verse 12 to 16 tonight. So verse number 12 of Mark chapter 14. And the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, Where wilt thou that we go and prepare that thou mayest eat the Passover? And he sendeth forth two of his disciples and saith unto them, Go ye into the street, and there shall meet you a man bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him. And wheresoever he shall go in, say to the goodman of the house, The master saith, Where is the guest chamber, where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. There make ready for us. And his disciples went forth and came into the city and found as he had said unto them. And they made ready the Passover. Let's pray together. Father, it is good to be in church on Wednesday night. It is refreshing, Father, to take this break from especially such a busy week between Christmas and New Year's and the days running together. And Father, it's just good to sit down and pause for a few minutes and open your word and hold it in our hands. And God, think about the things that you've recorded there. And I pray for tonight, for our study, for what we look at, that Lord, you'd use it to increase our awe of you, our love and respect for you, and Father, our devotion to you. Bless your word to each and every heart, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, tonight we begin on what we're calling the Last Supper. And this will take us all the way down through verse number 26 when they sing the hymn and they go out to the Mount of Olives. But we're breaking it into three different parts. You'll see tonight it's the Last Supper. Preparation for the Passover. That's what we're looking at tonight. Next week we'll be looking at announcing the betrayer, which kind of takes us back to verse 10 and 11, but that's going to become the topic again. And then thirdly, in the Last Supper, we'll look at instituting the Lord's Supper. And so these three things all happen from verse 12 down to verse number 26, and all circle on the Last Supper. Now, here's what I want us to get in our mind, because I think sometimes we don't separate this. The Last Supper happened the night before the Passover. All right. Jesus was betrayed the night before and killed on the Passover. He became the Passover lamb. So while everybody else was celebrating the Passover, Jesus Christ was dying on the cross. So this meal he has with them, especially beginning in verse number 18 and 19 when he sits down at the table with the disciples and eats with them, that's not the Passover supper. This is the night before it in the upper room. Judas Iscariot goes out and has already made a covenant, verse 10 and 11, to betray him. So these things happened the night before the Passover. Verse number 12 says this, And the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover. For our American mind, it's kind of challenging because the Jewish day started 6 p.m. And so this is 6 p.m., the day before the crucifixion. Now, tradition says that Jesus died on Friday, and we know that biblically that's not possible, because Jesus said as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. Jesus could not have been crucified on Friday and risen Sunday morning. because that's only Friday night and Saturday night. So tradition, whether well-intended or not, Good Friday, all that, is not lined up with the Bible. So you've got at least back up one day. So we're at least talking about Wednesday night and Thursday instead of Thursday night and Friday. And again, with those 6 to 6 hours and days. But suffice it to say, this is Wednesday night, all right? Because Thursday is when he's going to be betrayed. Thursday, whatever night it is, it's confusing to the American mind. But this is not the Passover, right? This is the night before, which we would put as Wednesday night, and not Thursday night, as tradition does it. Anyways, the first day of the unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto them, "Where wilt thou that we go and prepare that thou mayest eat the Passover?" First of all, we see in the verses we're looking at tonight the inquiry, or some say the inquiry. All right, but I don't know if it's old school or what, but I say inquiry. All right, the disciples inquire. They ask the Lord, "Where wilt thou that we go and prepare that thou mayest eat the Passover?" You know what that tells me? They had no plan. Where wilt thou that we go to prepare to eat the Passover? They were completely at his disposal. They weren't dictating to him. They were waiting for him to tell them. Those are good disciples. All right? They didn't presuppose that they're supposed to take it upon themselves. They said to the Lord, where are you going to have this? How are we going to do this? What are we going to do? They're yielding to him. And that's a good example for us in our life, to yield to the Lord Jesus Christ in our plans. They didn't know what the plan was. I like this. But they knew he had one. All right? Isn't that the way we live our life? We don't know what his plan is, but we know he has one. Sometimes we feel like we're just along for the ride. Sometimes we feel like we don't know where the car's going as far as life goes. But the Lord always has a plan. You know how they knew that? Not by mental telepathy, not by some supernatural insight. You know how they knew that the Lord always had a plan? Because they learned it by experience. Turn back just a couple chapters. Let me remind you. Look back in Mark chapter 11. Excuse me. Mark chapter 11 and verse number 1. "And when they came nigh to Jerusalem unto Bethphage and Bethany at the Mount of Olives, he sendeth forth two of his disciples and saith to them, Go your way into the village over against you. And as soon as you be entered into it, ye shall find a colt tied, wherein never man sat. Loose him and bring him." All right, you see the omniscience of God. Go into that city, and when you get there, you're going to see a colt. And not only are you going to see a colt, but you're going to see him tied up. And not only is he tied up, but he's a colt on which man has never sat. He's never been ridden before. The Lord knew all that stuff. Nobody else could possibly. Maybe the owner of the colt could know that information about it, but the Lord knew everything, detail about it. Verse 3, "And if any man say unto you, Why do you this?" He foresaw the question. "Say unto him that the Lord hath need of him, and straightway he will send him hither. And they went their way, and found the colt tied by the door without in a place where two ways met, and they loosed him." All right? In verse 4 it says, "And they went their way and found." Now look here back in chapter 14 where we're at. He tells them what to do, and I like this in verse 16, and we'll get there in a minute. In the middle of the verse, and he said, "And his disciples went forth and came to the city and found," same thing, "and found as he had said unto them." They knew they could trust the Lord's plan because they'd seen it work before. I dare say, I'm not speaking to a person in here who hasn't seen God work in your life before. In an unexpected way. In an unplanned way. And so the next time you're wondering how he's going to work and if he's going to work and where he's going to work, just trust him that he has a plan. I like when the Rogers sing a song, when you can't see his hand, trust his heart. Something like that. I'm not sure if I... Am I getting it backwards? All right, if you can't trace His hand, trust His heart. You've seen what the Lord has done before. You've seen His hand work. So trust Him this time that He's got a plan and He's going to work it out for perfection. You don't know what it is. It seems hard sometimes. But the disciples learned that by experience. They did not take the initiative, and I'm not talking about not taking initiative and things like that, but they knew as far as the Lord was concerned with something like this, the Passover, He had a plan and they yielded to it. I mean, they learned that. Look back at Matthew. I like this one. Anytime you think the Lord doesn't know what's going on. Matthew chapter 17. And you know the story. It's a familiar story. Matthew 17 and verse number 24. And when they were come to Capernaum, they that received tribute money came to Peter and said, Doth not your master pay tribute? And he saith, Yes. All right. He kind of put his foot in his mouth. He kind of committed the Lord right there. He wasn't sure, but he answered. And when he was come into the house, Jesus prevented him, saying, What thinkest thou, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute? Of their own children or of strangers? Peter saith unto them, Of strangers, Jesus saith unto him, Then are the children free. Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, go thou to the sea, cast an hook, take up the fish that first cometh up, and when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. That take and give unto them for me and thee. Again, you see the details in it? The Lord said, go to the sea, cast a hook, take up the fish that first cometh up, and when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. Was that prearranged? Did the Lord go early that morning and put a piece of a coin in a fish's mouth and then direct? No, this was all God's omniscience. He knew exactly. He knew every detail. Not a sparrow falls that He doesn't know. The hairs of our head are numbered. Nothing that happens to us takes God by surprise. All right? Follow His plan. Even when you don't know what the plan is, ask Him. All right? That's what the disciples said. Where wilt thou that we should prepare that thou mayest eat the Passover? Their inquiry. There's nothing wrong with asking God questions. You know it's not wrong to ask God why. Now, it's wrong to get hooked up on it too hard, but it's not wrong. It's right to ask Him why. Don't you want to know why? If God allows a situation, we want to know why. So if it's something we've done, we can correct it. If it's something we need to do, we can do it. If it's someone we can help them. We want it. God's not against you asking Him questions. He answers them through it. The whole attitude is the belief behind the questioning. The Pharisees and Sadducees came and questioned Him. The young lawyer came and questioned. And when it wasn't sincere, He didn't answer them. But when it's with sincerity, He does. Where wilt thou that we go and prepare that thou mayest eat the Passover? It was a special feast day. It was coming to Jerusalem. Multitudes were coming there. These Jewish men, like all Jewish men, needed to honor the Passover. Lord, how are we going to prepare? What do you want us to do? So He gives them instructions in verse 13 down to verse number 15. And again, these instructions are like they always are. They're so full of detail. This is not some astrologer or soothsayer guessing at some things or giving some generalities, like taking the hook and catching the fish that first comes up and opening its mouth and finding money. Those are specific details. Finding the colt that's tied up and no man has ridden on it. So the same thing happens here in verse 13. It impresses us with the omniscience of God, of how He knows all these details without pre-planning that. Now, some of the Bible commentators, I'll be honest with you, when they read through this, they see some preparation ahead of time. That they suggest that the Lord went into town and arranged these things. It's kind of like a spy novel. All right, here's the guy you're going to meet when you walk through town. Here's how you can spot him and then follow him home. But I think it's more the omniscience of God than it is a prearrangement, just like the other occasions. So let's look at it beginning in verse number 13, the instructions that He gives His disciples. It says in verse 13, He sendeth forth two of His disciples. Look at Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22. Where's my reference? Oh, here we go, back here. Luke chapter 22. I was reading one writer and he said about this, he said, we don't know who the two disciples were. And I'm not trying to be critical of that fellow, but we all make mistakes like that. Look at Luke chapter 22 and verse number 8. Verse 7, then came the day of unleavened bread when the Passover must be killed. This is the same story as Mark's giving us. And he sent Peter and John, saying, go and prepare us the Passover that we may eat. And they said unto him, where wilt thou that we prepare? So we do know who the two disciples are that Jesus sends out. They're Peter and John. You can kind of write that back in Mark chapter 14 in the margin there or something. But you know who it says he sendeth forth two of his disciples, according to Luke 22:8. That's Peter and John. And he saith unto them, go ye into the city, and there shall meet you a man bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him. All right? He said, he gives them four sets of instructions here, four details. He says, first of all, in verse number 13, go into the city, and there shall meet you a man bearing a pitcher of water. Now remember that in the city at this time are about 2.5 million Jews. And the Lord is sending them in and giving them direction, giving them details, and he says, here's what I want you to look for. Look for a man that's bearing a pitcher of water. Now, when we first read that, we might not think that's very significant. Let me ask you this. In knowing your New Testament, who goes out to the wells and fills the pots with water and brings them back to the house? The women. The women do. That was their responsibility, their job. It was going to be highly unusual. If you saw a man carrying water, it might be a little flask, a skin of some kind, but carrying a pitcher of water, a man doing that is going to be very inconspicuous. You're going to notice him. He's going to stand out. And the Lord knew there was going to be a man at that certain place, at that certain time, that was carrying a pitcher on his shoulder, carrying water back. Something that was going to be easy for them, even in a great multitude of people, something they would simply spot. But it was a very important detail. They could look past all the men and all the women until they found the one man that was carrying a pitcher up on his shoulder. Something that's not commonly done, not ordinarily done, but the Lord knew on this day it was going to be done. Now, was it prearranged? There's no way to find out. When did the Lord go arrange all that stuff and organize for a man to have this secret signal that he's got a pitcher on his shoulder? No, the Lord just knew what was going on. He knew that man was there, and he sent his disciples to the right place. God is miraculous at working details. And so, don't fret the details. God's got them under control. Now again, when I say don't fret them, it doesn't mean we don't care and we don't look for things and we're not interested, we're not to be passive, we're not to be lazy, but just understand that when it comes to God's plan, He even knows the exact details. He tells them, go into the city and you're going to meet a man. All right? Go into the city, one. There shall meet you a man, number two. He's bearing a pitcher of water, number three. Three details under that one statement. Then he says in verse number 13 at the end of the verse, follow him. He wants them to go to a certain place. And instead of saying, all right, go into the city, now they would have said kilometers and all that stuff, but because we're Americans, I refuse to use that. All right, go a quarter of a mile down this direction and then turn two blocks up that way. Go down this street and then the third house on the right, knock on the door. Instead of giving them directions that they're going to have to remember and all that he simply says this, you'll see a man with a pitcher, follow him. Wouldn't that be so much easier? You know, back before the GPS days, I mean, GPS now, nobody has to follow anybody. Nobody has to ask. I remember back in the old days living on the state route, I'd be out in the yard during the summertime and it was not unusual. Especially people with boats would pull up in the front of my house and ask me. They said, is this Route 22? No, this is Route 21. That happened very often. They were looking for Salt Fork, and they were one road over on the wrong road. So I'd say, go up here to this four-way up here to the Eckleberry, turn right on Eckleberry, and it'll dead end on Route 22, take a left. You know, I don't get to give directions anymore. Everybody's got a GPS, and they do it themselves. Back in these days, they didn't have a GPS. But the Lord didn't want to have to tell them, go up to the four-way, turn right, go over the interstate, and it'll dead-end into Drive 22, turn left, and you're 8 minutes from Salt Fork when you go out there. Instead of doing that, He said, you're going to see a man with a pitcher. How much simpler can it get? Follow Him. Wherever He goes, that's where I want you to go. So two details that He gives them that are simple and very clear and very precise. Go into the city, and there shall meet you a man bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him. Number three, He says, ask, and I like this. I thought about this, Wes, when I was typing this up. Ask the goodman. Not Wes Goodman, but ask the goodman of the house, all right? He's following what is probably the servant. It doesn't tell us that, but the man with the pitcher is going to be a servant. For some reason, the man is getting water. We don't know why. An unusual circumstance that the Lord foresaw. But He follows him and takes him to the master, the goodman of that house. Some have suggested, without any evidence or proof, but it's just we like to imagine things, that this house was the same house that was having a prayer meeting for Peter over in Acts chapter 12 when he was in prison, and the house of Mary was having a prayer conference, and the angel came and delivered him from them. And that was John Mark's mother's house. And they suggest that this is that same house. This was John Mark's father's house that the servant was going to. He is the goodman of this house. And again, there's nothing in the Bible other than imagination, which is nothing wrong with that, and picturing that situation and scenario. But anyways, He follows them to that house. Instead of a map, He's got a simpler plan. Follow Him. We used to have missionaries or things here, and we do now, and we'll take them out to eat after church. We'll say, let's go to Arby's, or let's go to Wendy's, or something like that. And I'll say, just go down the end of the road right here and turn left. They say, we'll just follow you. Great idea. So much simpler. So much easier. As long as you drive fast enough to follow me, all right? We'll be okay. Don't lag behind. Don't be way back there. Don't get caught at the light. But it's just so much easier to follow somebody. So the Lord's got this plan. He's got it all the pieces put together. He says, you're going to meet a man. Follow that man. Then He says, and then ask the goodman of the house. Follow that man, the servant, to the goodman, the master's house. He says, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? Again, if this is not prearranged and pre-planned, this man has an upper chamber that he's probably going to use. He's going to use it for the Passover, but the Passover is not for another 24 hours. Jesus is meeting with His disciples the night before the Passover. So He's gotten the tables, as it were, the tables and the chairs all set up and everything organized and the tablecloths out. He's got it all ready for the Passover, which is still two days away. But now the Lord has need of it. He's going to use it the night before, but it's already been fixed up and prepared. The Lord knew that. And He said, there's a man there and he's got a guest chamber. And He says, where is the guest chamber? Well, I shall eat the Passover with my disciples. We don't know who this man is, whether it's John Mark's dad. We don't know who it is, but we do know this. There's no argument. There's no debate. There's no hesitation. He immediately shows them the upper room. That shows a servant's heart, even though he's the master. It shows a servant's heart that when the Lord had need of it, and the disciples came asking for it, He willingly gave it. And it says in verse number 15, and He will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. There make ready for us. All right? So He met a man. He followed the man. He asked the goodman. And then He saw the room, or come and see the room, verse number 15. He will show you. All right? He will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. You could underline it. A large upper room furnished and prepared. I love our English language, and I'm not real good at grammar, nouns and adverbs and adjectives and all that stuff, but I know this. It could have said, and He will show you a room. That would have been sufficient, right? Go and ask the guest chamber, or ask the goodman, where is the guest chamber that I may have the supper with my disciples? And He showed him a room. That would have been sufficient. But the Lord gave more details than that. He said, He will show you a large room. We're talking about a supper with Jesus and His 12 disciples. 13 grown men in this room. All right? It's not one of these back rooms back here. It is a large room that's going to seat 13 people. Now, we've all seen Leonardo da Vinci's picture of the Last Supper, and it's quite humorous. I mean, it's one big long table with Jesus at the center and six disciples on one side and six on the other, and you can look out the window and see a beautiful Italian countryside. That's because the painter was Italian, because the picture, it didn't happen in Italy, it happened in Jerusalem. It had been a city of Jerusalem outside the window. And they're all sitting in straight up back chairs, and they're all facing the same direction, and that's completely contrary to the biblical picture of them in John chapter 13, sitting around a table on the floor, sitting all the way around it, where they're facing each other and having a conversation, and Jesus is ministering. And John, the disciple, is leaning upon Jesus because they're all in a half-laying, crouching position, not sitting upright at a table, but that's just tradition and things like that always go that way. But here, there's 13 men fitting into this room. It's not just a room. It's got to be a large room. But that's not all it says. It says a large upper room. As we know, Jewish custom in Jerusalem, they had flat roofs. That's where they did their cooking. That's where they stored their grains and things like that. And the upper class, the wealthier of the people, had not only that flat roof, but up there they had a chamber. And that chamber was for worship. It was for solitude. It was for storage sometimes. And only the upper class had those upper chambers there. And this man was one of those that had one. So not every room had the upper chamber, but this one did. And the Lord knew that. These details are all exact and precise. You'll find a man, he'll show you the room. It'll be a large room. It'll be a large upper room. It'll be a large upper room furnished. All right, that's what it says also, furnished, another detail. What does that mean? It means they had cleaned out everything that was in the room to prepare for the Passover. They had taken out the storage stuff, the grain and all that stuff, moved it out so they could use that room for their Passover, which they were going to use the day after the Lord used it with His disciples. So it had already been prepared. It had already been cleaned out. This, you know by reading the Old Testament how holy and special the Passover day was. There could be no leaven. There could be no grain spilled around. It had to be completely cleaned out. It had to be empty. There was nothing that could defile, nothing that could be considered unclean where they're going to have the Passover meal. And so that room had been prepared. It had been cleaned. It had been scrubbed out. So it says it had been furnished, and prepared. So five details are given in that one little phrase. I like that. You shall find a large upper room furnished and prepared. So the disciples had everything they needed already ready in that room. Here's what I like about it. The details. They're complex. The details, they're precise. The details, they're many. But the details were taken care of by the Lord. And not only were they taken care of by the Lord, but these disciples, when they got there, found out, we don't have to move any furniture. We don't have to take all the grains and things out and put the tables in. The Goodman's already done that. We don't have to scrub it and clean it and make sure there's nothing that's defiled. It's already been prepared. It's already been done. The work's already been done. When we follow God's plan, it's so much better than we follow our own. Because when we follow our own, you know what we find ourselves doing? Furnishing, preparing, working, laboring, trying to make things work out right, trying to make it happen right, trying to force it or jam it like a square peg into a round hole. We try to force things. If we just trust God, He says, I'll give you that large upper room furnished and prepared. Just have faith. Just trust Him. So the inquiry in verse 12, the instructions in verse number 13 to 15, and then the illumination in verse 16. You say, preacher, what do you mean by that? Well, and His disciples went forth and came into the city. What happened? They saw a man with a water pot. They followed Him. They went to the house. They asked the goodman of the house, where is the upper chair, where is the room? And he showed them one furnished and prepared. That's not all in that sentence right there. We just read that. But they simply said, his disciples went forth and came to the city and found as he had said unto them. Of course they did. They realized, here's just another sign that the Lord knows what He's doing. Another sign that His plan is always the best. That He'll get the details worked out. That we simply need to trust Him. Again, you know when I say that, I'm not saying that that means we just are like an ostrich and we stick our head in the sand and say, God will work everything out. No, God gives us wisdom. God gives us abilities to do things at certain times. But when it comes push to shove, and when we know this is beyond our capabilities and we need to trust Him, there's no reason not to. He has shown us by various examples in the Bible that He is capable of handling anything that comes His way. A last-minute request for tribute. A fish with a coin in its mouth. Trying to get into Jerusalem on that day, Palm Sunday. There's a colt tied upon which man has never ridden before. Trying to find somewhere to have the Passover with disciples. It's all been worked out. God's taken care of it. And they came into the city and found as He said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. All they had to do now is get ready to eat. All they had to do now is enjoy the blessings of what God had provided for them. There's not a lot of labor involved in what they had to do. Sometimes we work hard at trying to get something to come to pass because we're trying to force something that's not in the will of God. Now again, it doesn't mean that we don't try doors to see whether God's at that door or not. But you'll come to a point where you try that door and realize it's not opening. That's not time to kick it. That's not time to put the shoulder into it. That's the time to trust God that if He wants it open, He's going to open because He's got the way of opening any door He needs to open by any means He needs to do it. We simply need to learn to trust Him. The disciples are having another lesson in a learning experience of trusting the Lord's direction. And as we read it, it speaks to us of the same thing. God is in the details. God has a plan. We need to follow that plan. Oh, if the disciples had tried, can you imagine them trying to manage this whole thing? Well, we'll find a place, Lord. We'll find a place to have the Passover. And they got to begin scouring the city and looking for a place while everybody's preparing for it already and everybody's going to tell them, no, sorry, my place is already taken. We're already using it. The Lord had all the things worked out and made it so easy. Simply trust. All right, let's stand together this evening.